Shut up and sit down.
Hi, Sharon, thought I'd give you a ring. It crossed my mind, so now I'm wondering if you're not settled in, you might like to meddle in some adrenaline pumping peddling.
Oh, dolls, I thought you'd never ask. I'd love to get my hand behind some handlebars.
You are listening to another episode of the Dialed Podcast with Matt LeGrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. The guys blabber on about themselves, talk to someone else about some stuff, and finish by blabbering just a little more. There you go. The show in a nutshell. Tip of the day. Talk does not cook rice. So quit yapping and get to it already.
You can watch me whoosh by on my push back, my tush high and my thighs bumping away. Seems like a sweet deal. It's in three wheels. Yet I steal the show from your Camry.
On my bicycle like was icicle.
But now I'm cruising with the grace of a manta ray. I'm on the home game from my own lane. Hey, Lorraine, out of the chain. Yeah, you know that I'm a psycho.
Immediately regret this decision.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Von During, and I'm here with Lance Hepler.
Lance Romance, right here privately in studio, just me and Jake.
I don't know. Is that scary?
Yeah.
A little bit?
No.
No, the guys aren't here.
No.
You know why?
Why?
It's a Lance interview.
My favorite subject.
Yeah, we did the, exactly. I figured you'd love this. We did the Matt interview a couple weeks ago, and actually I heard from quite a few people that they quite like that.
Oh, that's cool. Well, they're going to hate this one.
Right on. Hey, before we get into all that fun stuff, you got any backpedaling you want to do?
I did ride my bike. I spent last week in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Had a great time with my kids. All my kids were there, and we rented this Airbnb right up by the Capitol in Salt Lake City. So it was beautiful, gorgeous weather all week. The sun was shining, so I managed to get outside and ride a few times. It's cold, but the sun was shining. So
see any snow?
I rode my road bike up City Creek Canyon. It kind of turns to dirt at some point, and I rode it until it started snowing on me, and I turned around and rode back down.
Were you dressed accordingly?
No, I was in shorts.
Figured as much.
It was like 38 degrees.
Sure.
So it wasn't super cold, but.
Did the Heplers have a good Thanksgiving?
We had a great time. We had a great time. Cool. So it was a lot of fun.
Good to hear.
There was a Peloton bike. We were going to talk about that because there was a Peloton bike in the house that we rented, and my wife rode it like three or four times. A Peloton bike, yes, is a spin bike. It is not. It there's no coasting in it, right? So it's built like a spin bike. It's not like your regular bike. We talked about that. I jumped on for about 4 minutes and just went, nope. The sun was shining. I wanted to ride outside, so.
You didn't go after everybody on the leaderboard? Set some Peloton KOMs?
I did not set any Peloton KOMs because there's no such thing.
Don't they have like a watts leaderboard or something
like
that?
Yeah, so your average like watts, I think you move up depending on, you know, yeah. Yeah, you can compete on it for sure, but I don't know. It was too nice outside. I just couldn't pull myself to ride it, so I didn't.
Gotcha. I probably would have done the same thing. If I was in your shoes,
yeah,
maybe not. I don't know. The kicker bike is awfully nice, though. I'll tell you.
I'm jealous. Actually.
Yep. That's cool. My back pedal, not too much, but I did get a fair amount of intensity-ish kind of stuff, and like some good like workouts in last week. The team ride on Zwift was good, and then we did a Thanksgiving gravel ride. I think it was, God, what time were we rolling that? About 9:30 in the morning, and I'm just in the habit of doing like because I'm trying to, you know, get some semblance of shape about me or having less shape about me and be getting more in shape. So I've been doing the intermittent fasting stuff again. And I just was in a mindset of like, oh, not eating and didn't think about it. So I didn't eat before that ride.
Right.
That's like a, you know, 2 hour plus gravel ride. And whenever you go out with the team,
there's some intensity.
You can say, yeah, it's going to be a social ride. It's going to be regroups. We're going to be going easy. That never happens.
Yeah.
And about an hour and a half into that, I'm like, I didn't eat anything, and I'm just realizing that, and I am cracking hard. I was sitting on the back of the train on the dike, and I was just like struggling to hold on. It was just like I went like from 60 to 0 like awfully quick, but it was still a good time. And then we did a bull run ride this past weekend.
That looked like it was fun.
That was a beautiful day for a ride.
I was sad to miss that.
Yep. It myself and 5 other teammates, and just a fun little pace, and had another good workout. And then we did the team ride last night on Tuesday. By the way, we're recording this on Wednesday, not Monday. And so basically in about a week's time, it was like 4 good tough workouts, and I'm feeling that right now.
You're feeling a little sore.
Everywhere, yeah, but it's all good.
I even jumped on the Zwift ride last night.
Yeah.
And
you held your own, too.
I felt okay.
Nice.
I didn't feel too bad.
Cool.
So...
right on. Let's move on to the lead out news. Do you have any news for us, Mr. Hepler?
I tell you what.
Yep.
I don't.
You don't?
There's very little that happened.
Three Kings are going to be racing each other here pretty soon, even though there's a bunch of cyclocross races either getting shut down or minimized down to just the racers themselves. But
the Omicron, did I say that right?
Sure.
The Omicron variant is kind of spreading through Europe, and so we are... it's starting to quarantine again.
I think that they had the first confirmed case here in the United States.
Yeah.
So the cyclocross over there is getting hot and heavy, and Pidcock and Vanderpool
and Van Aert,
they're all going to be racing. I think there's 3 races where all 3 of them are going to be in there together, and I can't wait to watch that. That's going to be fantastic.
That should be fun to watch.
But they look like they're still going to be doing those races, so it's just not going to have a crowd. I wonder how much that affects them. Like not having the crowd there cheering them on, because that's a big component of the racing
there.
It is,
but last year they did all those races with no crowds.
True.
So
true.
And even the races with crowds have only had about a third or half of the people who normally are at those races, even in Belgium.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it should be interesting.
Awesome. So. And then when was the last cyclocross race? Was that the weekend prior? Did we already talk about that last week?
We did talk about the Cross Crusade, how that wrapped up.
Okay, but the guys from the Cross Crusade, or Kevin, at least one of the promoters from the Cross Crusade, put on the Washington State
Regional
Championships for cyclocross up in Port Angeles area.
Is it Port Angeles or Port Townsend? I think it's Port Angeles.
I think it's Port Angeles.
I think you're right.
Been near the Seattle area.
Yeah.
And that happened this past weekend. Got any feedback on that?
It was
a sloppy, muddy, wet mess.
It rained really bad, and so it got really kind of nasty out there.
That atmospheric river thing that blasted through and dropped God knows how much rain.
They actually built Belgian stairs at the course
and
like a sand pit for the course. So they've actually done some things to make it a year-round place. Well, year-round, a place where they can hold cross races quite often because it's on private property up there. And they couldn't even use the Belgian stairs because there was so much mud. It was like, it was nasty.
All of the reports I've heard, all of the feedback I've heard is that it was spectacular venue, though. The venue itself was great.
And I did a race there in March.
And?
And, the venue was fantastic. Tons of parking, lots of space, good spaces to warm up, lots of terrain that you can have different cross things in. It's a great venue.
So a great destination for those that are racing cyclocross here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes.
So,
and they're trying to ramp that up by building, permanent features at the site, and hope to. When I talked to Kevin before, the hope was to attract a UCI race there, probably a C2 race, maybe even a C1, but their hope was to attract something to the site because it's a great site for it.
Yep, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. Could you imagine seeing some big names up there and being able to travel up there to watch them?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
A couple pretty big names are going to be in Arkansas this year for the UCI World Championships, right?
Yes.
So that ought to be interesting. And I think Wout's pretty much the only one that's still on the fence, and he's just wanting to wait and see how he feels. But
correct.
God, it would almost be worth it to go out there just to watch that, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be fantastic for you. As a matter of fact, you're probably plotting and scheming how you're going to get out there.
There has been some thoughts about that, but... I might be in Hawaii instead.
Right on. All right. Well, then let's kick on. I want to get through all the stuff because I want to get to the Lance interview. How about a Patreon drawing?
All right.
All right. We're going to do this. I'm going to shake up the little bottle here. And Lance, you can pull one out. Who's our winner chicken dinner for the Patreon?
The winner of this week's Patreon drawing is Kim Catherine.
Hey, Kim Catherine, atta girl. You want to put that in the she already won pile now?
Yep.
Kim, you are a local, so when you listen to this, you'll gladly pat yourself on the back, and you can come on down to the lab here and pick something out of the Patreon winner's grab bag of goodies, and yeah, that'll be fun for you. If anybody else out there is interested in becoming a patron, go to dialpodcast.com, and you can click on the Patreon link there and choose a Patreon level that works best for you, and we greatly appreciate everybody's supporting of the show. It helps this little dog and pony show go on every single week, and it helps helps us out tremendously. Appreciate that.
Love it.
Cool. All right. Lance, you are the topic of the week.
Oh, no. This could go like 50 different directions, yeah. Jake.
So you came onto the podcast, and I think it was like episode 3.
I think it was episode 3 or 4. I invited myself on it.
Pretty much. You know, the first episode wasn't even really like planned to be an episode. We just did a fake recording, and they're like, you know what? Let's just put that out there, and then did another one. And I think you maybe listened to them, and then the next thing you know, like, hey, can I be on that? I'm like, abso-frickin-lutely. I didn't know that you'd be interested or having the time. And that was around the time that you retired from dentistry, correct?
It was shortly after retired, yes. Okay. I retired in February of 2018.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's my little segue into dentistry, by the way. Smooth, huh?
Dentistry.
First question, do you miss being a dentist? Do you miss being Dr. Hepler?
No.
Not at all. I mean, what are some positive takeaways from being a dentist other than the fact that you got to retire early and you can connect the dots on that? You did all right for yourself.
I made a lot of money in dentistry. I did. I loved being able to help people.
Yeah.
That was very rewarding to be able to help people, to be able to take somebody that has a problem and see how to fix it and be able to fix it in a way that was better than they expected. Either better, it didn't hurt as much, it wasn't as difficult, or it wasn't as expensive. Mm-hmm. And so that was very rewarding to be able to help people like that. But the day in and day out of being a dentist is quite stressful.
How so?
Most dentists are small business owner as well, and running a small business with your own employees can be very stressful and challenging.
A pain in the beep.
Yes. So I was lucky to end up with some fantastic employees for the last few years of my career. But that was always a struggle dealing with employees. So that's difficult.
Yeah, you're always going to have people that are difficult to deal with, and people are different stations of their life, and people are going to have problems. And unfortunately, being a business owner, a lot of times their problems become your problems because you have to deal with them in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But you, let's just kind of press pause on that. You actually have a YouTube channel. It's not huge. You don't post to it often, but you've got the Lance Hepler
because I've got
channel.
A few things in there.
So I've looked at that before, and your employees have put together videos before you, and they loved you, and those videos are hilarious.
Some of them are pretty hilarious. Yes.
So they all have nice things to say about you. So I mean, you did a good job of like corralling people. How much of the Lance romance came out in the dentistry practice?
You know, I am a jovial, joking kind of person. That's just my personality.
Sure.
And so a lot of that did come out in the way I dealt with patients and with employees, because my goal with patients and employees was I wanted them to like me.
Yeah.
And dentistry is not really a likable profession.
No, I actually don't like dentists at all.
it's normal. And most everybody who comes in is stressed out.
Yeah.
They're either in pain, or they're nervous that it's going to hurt, or they're nervous how much it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. And so
all of the above.
Yeah. Yep. So everybody comes in just a little off usually.
Sure.
And so you kind of end up seeing the worst in people, and that makes it hard. My deflection technique was to make fun of things, either myself. It's the same thing I do now.
Sure.
I do that a lot now, but I would try to make people comfortable by making fun of myself or making fun of certain things. And I think that made people a little more comfortable. So
that's good.
I don't know if that really worked or if it didn't work, but I did a lot of that.
Okay. Well, dentistry had its upside. It took care of you well, took care of your family, and you were able to retire before you hit 50. And for a lot of people, they're trying to retire before they hit 65. So good on you.
Thank you.
Dentistry also had a lot of strain for you too. And it actually caused you to have some issues that you're still dealing with today. Correct?
That is correct.
Do you want to tell us what's going on with you and your back and the woes that you have there?
I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast know that I have health issues related to my back. And I think half of my back issues have to do with the practice of dentistry.
Uh-huh.
I have herniated discs at L3, L4, and L4, L5.
Yep.
A couple different locations in my lumbar region of my back. And a lot of that comes from the stress of bending over all day long. And as a dentist, I was trying to make people as comfortable as possible, and I mistakenly was willing to sacrifice my own comfort to make a patient more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And it ultimately led to pretty significant back issues that is what eventually pushed me out. I was not planning to retire at 47 years old.
Yeah.
That was not the plan. The plan was to work until I was 55 or so, and then, you know, sell things. But I ended up having such severe back issues that I ended up with a drop foot on my right side, and I couldn't actually run the drill pedal.
Oh, seriously.
As efficiently as I could before. I could still do it, but my right foot doesn't work properly. It still doesn't. And so I ended up looking into seeing what maybe if I could retire early. And I was very fortunate in the way that I practiced that I was able to put some money away. This is a whole nother topic, but I invested well with most of that money. And it was more my investments that allowed me to say I can retire and I think I can be done than it was. My practice of dentistry allowed me to make enough money that I could invest it. I didn't spend it all. I didn't buy the McMansion or the sports car while I was practicing. I was very cautious with how I spent money, and that allowed me to, when my back went to crap, that I could actually...
Like, oh, wait a second,
I can do this. Yep. So I did it 7 or 8 or 10 years earlier than I anticipated.
Gotcha. Now, through the process of being a dentist and being savvy about, you know, your retirement process and like the goals that you had there. I mean, you were doing a good job. You've actually been invited to be a guest speaker. George Fox?
George Fox
yeah.
University.
Like
yeah.
you did, and that's on your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
If you guys want to go watch it, you were invited to come in to do a little bit of motivational speaking / like talk about like business practices and things of that nature.
Correct.
Tell me about that.
The way I ran my office was kind of unique, as far as dentists go, and not my dental practice was in the top 1% for profitability in dental practices in the United States. And so when you have that kind of success, people, they want to know why. How did you do that?
Yeah.
What did you do? How, tell me what happened. And so I got invited to speak in an entrepreneur class at George Fox University. I went back and got an MBA at George Fox.
There you go.
So I did this in 2004 or 2005. I can't remember the year I did it.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. But it was after I'd been practicing for several years, for 10, 12 years, I went back and got a master's in business administration through George Fox University. And during that process, I met quite a few people that asked me to come speak at different conferences, not just dental related, but also entrepreneurship related and staff management related, because I think those were a couple things that I was decent at. I feel like I'm just bragging about myself.
You're not. You're telling us a story. I'm asking you to tell me the stuff I want to know. And for those of you listening, no matter what you're doing, take notes of these little things. These are like little pearls of wisdom that Lance has to throw out there, whether he wants to admit it or not. He, you know, it might sound a little braggadocious, but doing these little things right in anything that you do in your life can yield good results.
Yeah.
You know, it comes back to being a good person.
Yeah.
You're generous with your time. You're generous with your money. You're fun, and you want to help people. I mean, all of these things are good positive attributes about you, and you've been successful too. I mean, I still joke with you about, like, hey, can I borrow that lucky rabbit's foot in your back pocket? Because Lance can never seem to do no wrong when it comes to the world of business and family and friendship and stuff like that.
I'm sure
that there's been a few little bumps along the way, but that's just life. But I mean, you, all these little things, it's because it's you, it's who you are. And that's what makes you a special dude. That's why I'm proud to call you a friend. So,
well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Jake.
So going back to this though, I mean, you've done really well. You did really well in the business side. Do you ever see yourself getting back into anything business related other than just managing your business portfolios that you have now?
I don't know. That's a good question. I very much enjoyed what I was able to accomplish with dentistry. Mm-hmm. But gosh, dang it, I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, not necessarily dentistry, though, but you've got all these massive skill sets that you've refined and made even better over the course of time that, you know, if you're involved with something, no matter what level, they're going to benefit from having you around.
Yeah, staff management things, business-related things, business strategies, dealing with people and patients and customers and
sure,
you know, thing like that. I've had a lot of success.
It's hard to turn that off, at least for me. And so everybody's different, so that's what I have to like constantly remind myself. Like, you've got all these things, and like you've been comfortably retired for 3+, almost 4 years now.
It's coming up on 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get the itch? Do you feel like I've got all these things, or are you just having so much fun that it doesn't matter? But I personally see myself getting that itch. Like, all right, I've done all this fun stuff. I need to go back and have an outlet. I need to be able to go back and do something that I can, you know, do what I'm good at and just do it a little bit differently, not get overly involved where it's going to take over your life. But do you ever find yourself wanting to scratch that itch anymore?
Well, I tell you what, no. And part of that reason is my entire professional career, I always was trying to balance the family issue with my business issue, you know, my family time, the time I spent on my business, and the time I spent in sport or
sure,
competing. Those were three things that I was always juggling. And as I neared this retirement, the business part just got taken away, and I was able to focus so much more on sport, which is why I'm sitting here with you.
True.
And why I've been so involved with Dialed Cycling as well, because I was able to just dive into this thing that personally gave me so much joy and that I enjoyed doing so much. I love riding bikes. I love racing bikes even more than I like riding bikes. Mm-hmm. And being a part of all this made me, you know, allowed me to do that. It just so happened at that same time, I'm in a weird spot in my personal life because my kids are all gone. Mm-hmm. And people know this at this point, but it happened before I retired. My kids had all graduated from high school. They had all moved away. Nobody was living at home. I didn't have a job. None of my kids were married. I didn't have any grandkids. My family responsibilities just like
poof,
just went away.
Hey, Brandy, what do you want to go do?
It was just me and my wife. And so, which is why I bought the van and we've been traveling like we have. And so, oh my gosh, the last 3 years of my life have been the best 3 years of my life.
Here's a
by
funny
far.
Question that everybody's going to want to know. Lance, when you bought your van, I think it was about 3 years ago to the date.
About 3 years ago.
It was in November of 2018. So, how many miles were on that van when you bought it?
It had 26,000 miles on it when
okay,
I bought it.
This is not Lance's daily driver. This is his little fun toy to go play bikes. Lance, how many miles are on that today, 3 years later?
It has 136,000 miles on it right now.
How many times has that van been across the country?
I've driven it across the country three times.
Three times? How many times has it been from the utmost part of the Pacific Northwest to the southernmost part of the Southwest?
I've probably done a Western swing trip like
a dozen times.
A dozen times, probably.
That's the life right there. Lance, how do you feel about the van life?
I love it.
Yeah.
It has been
pretty fantastic.
I am not a complicated person. Yeah. I don't need the Ritz-Carlton, and I don't need a fancy hotel, and I don't need a shower
every
day.
Lance has got friends in all the places, though. It's like he'll go for 2 or 3 days. And like, hey, so-and-so lives about 100 miles from here. Let's go this direction. Knock, knock, knock. Hey, can I take a shower?
I know enough people that have homes across the Western United States that were literally like always within 5 or 6 hours of
gotcha.
Laundry facility or a shower yep. or refilling my water tank.
Yep, yep.
So
let's get back to the business part of things. I know I've asked you all these questions, and I did something prior to this in a different life, and I did that for 15 years, and that is behind us now, and I don't do that anymore. That was sold off, and my wife and I, we moved here to the Pacific Northwest, and I actually made a promise to my wife when we first moved here that I wouldn't work, you know, because I'd been working too much, and I understand that whole, like, sacrifice thing for... and you said this in a podcast a long time ago. You can only do 3 things really well. You try and add any more to that, and it's just not going to happen, right?
It's difficult to do more than 3 things well in your life.
Yeah.
You can do 4 or 5 things, but something's going to suffer.
Suffer, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, in a long time, it was training, it was family, it was the work. But for the work, for me, was like that was almost like 2 things because, I don't know, it was just a behemoth of a monster to try and manage. So, there was things that suffered in the family. And then when we came up here, it was like, all right, we're going to get acclimated. We're going to get the kids acclimated because she was very worried about that. My wife is a professional and she was very sought after and she's able to get jobs pretty easily and get paid pretty well. So I didn't have to work when we first moved here.
Sure.
And that lasted for about 2 months. And that's why I ask you, like, how are you 3 plus almost 4 years into this thing not getting the itch? And we kind of get it. You just painted a good picture there. But
because I'm having too much fun. Yeah, as part of it.
Yeah. So we were here for that time, and then I told my wife, this is like 2 months into this thing, the kids are doing fantastic. They all got piles of friends. They took to this place like a fish in water.
Sure.
Everything was great, and I was riding. I didn't know anybody, and I was that was like my only outlet. Like when everybody was gone at school and work during the day, I just would go ride, and that was fantastic. But I needed something to kind of plug into, something to be creative with, and that's when I told my wife, I'm like, hey, how about I start a little bike business and I'm going to do it from home. And I promise you, I'm not going to invest a single dime into this. And just jokingly, I'm like, it's not going to cost us anything. It'll just be super simple. And she's like, as long as you can keep it to that, that sounds like a good plan. So that was when Dialed Cycling was born. And then, you know, fast forward, like a bunch of other things happened. That's how it was. And then here we are today. And now we've got this big team.
We're a busy shop.
We've got the podcast thing, and if we had time, we'd be doing more YouTube stuff. And if people only knew about the other 20 things that are on the horizon that we've got going on, it's going to be a fantastic ride for us over the next 3 or 4 years.
We have some stuff brewing.
So I don't ever consider this work, though, yet it's doing well. And I come here every day, and I kind of pinch myself because we get to do a podcast. We get to play with, like,
right.
Cameras and all that other stuff, the stuff that I love, like Matt as well. And I get to work with bikes and talk to people and friends and all the friends on the team. Like, this doesn't feel like work. And this is my creative itch being scratched. It's the business itch being scratched. And it's like my passion is getting, like, taken care of there as well. And, you know, you kind of floated in and you're doing a little bit of the same thing. You're kind of maybe getting a little bit of that here. And you and I have kind of been dabbling in some stuff together. And you have a presence here and you're a part of the lab almost as much as I am when you're in town.
When I'm in town.
So does this place allow you to kind of have a little bit of an outlet there?
It does. When I sold my dental offices, I kind of turned from being a business owner to an investor.
Yeah.
I came away with a chunk of money and I actually put all that money to work right away. So I get a lot of my business itch by managing my investments.
Sure.
I have 17 or 18 different kind of complicated investments that I own. And so managing all those and which ones are working and which ones aren't and which ones are making money and which ones are going to take time, all that stuff kind of helps. It just gave me like a second career of being an investor in different things. And so, I mean, I invest in lots of different things. I have personal real estate that I own.
Yep.
I'm part owners in several different hotels. I'm part owners in some big apartment complexes, in some commercial buildings. I do some oil and gas mineral rights things in the tiny vacation homes.
I should say
property.
Tiny homes. Yep.
Tiny homes. I own like 1.5% of that whole resort. And so I've kind of spread all these different things out. I own a piece of a few other different businesses as well that I like did some angel investing for that just like
blew up. Yep.
And so all these things, you know, if out of these 17, 18 different things that I'm invested in, if 7 or 8 completely tanked, mm-hmm. I'm going back to work.
Are you really?
I'd have to.
Dial dentistry?
Maybe we'd have a dial dentistry lab. But at this point, my wife does not want me to go back to work. Because I was not as happy-go-lucky as I am now. Just because there was so much more stress in my life. I mean, those 20 years that I worked in dentistry, it was 60, 70-hour weeks every week because I owned 3 different offices and I managed all those employees and I had different dentists that worked for me in a couple places.
And these 3 offices weren't within a 5-mile radius of each other. You were putting in some serious miles,
well,
too, correct?
Well, they were within 2 hours of each other.
But still, to go to a story, it's how long?
It's an hour and 45 minutes if you leave at 5 in the morning. When there's no traffic.
Yeah, and then you got to come back, too. So there's both sides.
Yeah.
And having to do that regularly, I mean, that wears on you a little bit.
I did that every weekend for almost 2 years before I finally got it built up enough that I could hire somebody to work it out there. And once that happened, I only went out once a month or once every 6 or 8 weeks. So it changed a little bit. So there was big hours that I was putting in, and that took a toll on me, you know, physically and personally, because I just couldn't spend as much time doing other things. I mean, the idea was to always build them up enough that I could sell them to somebody, and that's what eventually happened. The Astoria office I owned for 12 years or something like that. It was quite a long time. And I also own an office in Silverton, Oregon, down by Salem. And that one I owned less because it kind of took off a little bit better, and my exit strategy worked out much better than it did in Astoria down in Silverton. But, you know, all that stuff took a stressful toll on me, and so I was just not as easygoing or happy person, and so my wife is like, you're never going back to dentistry.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. I mean, all of that stuff, you can't just turn that light switch off. That stuff is like ingrained in you, and you have to have time to wind down, and you never get enough of that time.
No.
And then, you know, you need to be able to engage with your family, and
it's
hard to do that when you're trying to come off of like the stress and the anxieties and the different, you know, inputs that you're getting from these business ventures. I get that.
I knew that it would be hard on me to not have the business, you know, something to dive into right after I retired. But I kind of told myself, I'm going to give myself a year to screw off. Okay, I'm just going to manage these investments. And obviously, managing my investments takes 5 or 6 hours a week. It doesn't take 60 hours a week.
Sure.
It does not take very much. And so I told myself I was just going to screw off for a year, and then we'll see what I needed to do. But luckily, I met you, Jake. And being involved with the Dialed Cycling Lab, and believe me, people, I am a very silent partner. I'm not even really a partner. I'm more of a, I don't know, how would you, I'm a sounding board for Jake for business ideas, more or less.
That, and we've done a few things here business-wise, and I think there will be more of that to come. And
yes.
The whole thing with this whole Dialed Cycling Lab is like, I don't like to stop. It's like scaling. How do we scale more? How do we do this right? How do we take care of people? How do we, you know, and Lance and I can have great conversations. That's why it's fun going on long bike rides with you.
We do.
We sit around at the lab and talk about this stuff and like just like what would work. And I love throwing things against the wall and seeing what stick. And I like doing that even more with somebody that's got a lot of business sense and practicalities. And, you know, sometimes I'll get a little frustrated with something or somebody, or like an idea is kind of like stumping me just a tiny bit. And it's fun to have you to bounce that off of, because like I can get some validation of like, all right, the way that I'm feeling, that makes sense. Or the things that we're wanting to do, that makes sense. Or the things that we shouldn't do, that makes sense too. So,
or we have a good enough relationship when I can say, Jake, you're being dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And you can't do that with everybody.
No.
You know? And so, yeah. So being a part of this has given me an outlet. The best part about it is I have zero responsibilities, which means I don't have to be here every day. You know, or you know, when it works out. Before we had Paul, I felt like I really should be here because it was way too much just for Jake to do. It was there was too much bike work to do, which I loved doing.
Yeah. It's fun. I still love doing it too. But there's so much to do here. I can't imagine like not having him because there's so many things here like that take up so much more time.
And yes.
Now it's like, all right, people show up all day long. And like we were talking about this yesterday, like somebody came in at the end of the day and was, "Hey Jake, how's it going?" I talked to him. He's like, "Hey, are you all right? Your voice sounds sick or something like that?" I'm like, "No, I haven't stopped talking since 10 o'clock this morning." It's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm like, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm hoarse because I literally talked all day long. And I love that. It makes the day go by so fast. People come in, they want to talk about bikes and they're asking questions about this. And you just get chit chatting about things. And that part's fun. But the downside to that is you don't get anything done.
You don't get anything done.
So I got to figure out a buffer zone there or have a way to a space where I can work, where I can kind of be like sequestered and let Paul do all the talk. Right? We know how much Paul loves to talk, right?
Poor Paul. We're just pulling him out of his shell.
Yeah, he's doing awesome.
Reluctantly, we're pulling Paul out of his shell.
He has grown so much over this last year. And then like professionally speaking, he's grown a lot there too. So I'm excited for him.
He's been a great addition to this place.
He's fantastic. Yeah. And then we've got a few other people down here too. But the long story short is the team here is growing and that's fantastic. It's all the little things that we want out of it. So going back to that scratching that business itch, that's probably a big reason why you just jumped right on the whole podcast thing, right? This budding empire of a podcast that we have.
Yeah. It gave me an outlet to talk about something that I love.
Sure.
And to be involved with something that we could potentially grow.
Sure.
Or scale.
Yep, yep.
So that was very intriguing to me.
Yeah, it's that here with the podcast. It's with the lab. It's with the team. It's with the YouTube channel. Watching all that stuff just kind of grow and take off, that's a lot of fun.
I really enjoy doing that. So I do get a bit of that. And it's all fun for me. You know, dentistry can be very consuming because you have to be very up to date to just know how to do the procedures you're doing and the business things and the keeping track of all that stuff. But it's not fun like bikes is fun. Bikes are fun.
100%, yeah. Put your pinch in where your passion's at and have fun with it. I mean, that's our pastime. It's a good time. Real quick, the motivational speaking, is that something that you would ever do again?
I don't mind doing it. I've been asked several times to do it.
Uh-huh.
There's several dental educators that would like for me to come in and tell my story because really, even in dentistry, only 3% of dentists can retire at 65.
Seriously.
3%.
And so that's where you can come in and teach the whole, don't buy the McMansion, don't buy the sports car, don't do all the lavish things, live within your means and understand how to invest. And that's where I see a lot of people making mistakes. And that's not just dentistry. That's all industry. Like people you've always see these people like they're living like paycheck to paycheck and then they'll make a little bit of money. And then the next thing you know, like, oh, I've got this extra money, go and buy a bigger house. And then all of a sudden you're not paycheck to paycheck, but you're still pretty stinking close to that. And it just always ratchets up. So those two lines almost parallel each other. Whereas like you bought a nice house. It's not, when you first probably bought it, it wasn't probably expensive. It was probably just middle of the road, right?
Do you want me to tell you that story?
Go ahead.
I've lived in the same house my entire professional career, and that is extremely rare in business and in dentistry, too. People usually buy a starter house and then move on. I bought my house 4 months out of dental school. And we bought it in Vancouver because we wanted to live in that area. My in-laws lived here, and the tax structure in Washington is better than in Oregon.
Yep.
And so that was a big draw for me to come here. And so the house that we bought was only 1,500 square feet, and it was built in 1945.
Wow.
So it was an old house that had some updating in like the 80s. So very little. And we
When you first moved in there, kids, you had how many?
We had all three. We had two kids.
Uh-huh.
We had two kids in dental school, and then Darby, my youngest, was born like the second year we lived there.
Okay.
So Darby's only known that house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd probably kill you if you sold that. She'd probably buy it from you, which she did.
Actually wants to live there.
I can imagine that.
Actually, I'm not going to be an empty nester come summertime because she's moving back.
Graduates
from college. So they'll move back for a little while before they get on their feet, which is great. Yeah, we lived in this 1,500 square foot house with three kids until we lived there for 15 years before I finally like full on remodeled it.
Yeah.
So.
And went from 1,500 square feet to
2,200 square feet.
Did you add a whole second story to that? Or
no.
How did you make it? Did you expand it out? Or
we finished an unfinished basement.
Okay.
And we bumped one wall out.
Okay.
That was it. So we only added 700 square feet. So I only live in a 2,200 square foot house. It's not gigantic.
But it's nice.
It's, well, we have almost an acre and a half.
Yep.
That's the
beauty
of it.
In a part of town where that is not normal.
No.
So.
And the location has been fantastic for us. So
minus the cars jumping over
minus the cars. Yeah. Occasionally we have to deal with a drunk driver that blows a stop sign and ends up in our front yard or our backyard.
There you go.
That's happened four times.
Oh, geez.
We've been there for 20 plus years. We've been there for like 22 years. So the fact that it's only happened four times.
That's not bad.
I guess it's not bad.
Run the numbers, yep.
When you run the numbers. But yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people will upgrade their house or move to a bigger place, and that's just something we never did. We just remodeled and decided to stay there instead. And so because of that, I mean, my home is paid off, and we paid it off before I even retired. And so, again, that just takes so much pressure off. That's one of the things, as a young business professional, I mean, I some books made a big impact on me. Mm-hmm. Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad and Stanley's The Millionaire Next Door. Those are books that had a big impact on me, young in my career, and kind of shaped me moving towards investing my money instead of spending my money. And that set me up for why I'm sitting here today, mm-hmm. and I was able to retire. Those things helped me out tremendously. Don't get me wrong. We still had fun. We still spent money. We still went on vacations. I just was very cautious about what we spent my money on. And I have screwed up some investments too. That's why I'm better at it than I am now, because I screwed up quite a few investments early on.
I wholeheartedly think that that's a good thing.
Yes.
You don't learn from doing things right.
No.
You learn from doing things wrong and making mistakes, and then that's when you can recalibrate and hopefully, you know, pick yourself up, which you should be able to do no matter what, and just give it another whack and do it differently the next time.
And that's why I'm realistic about my investment career at the moment, because, you know, all these different investments that I'm a part of, I know that one or two or three are going to tank. It's going to happen. It's just the law of averages. Stuff just happens. And so I have to prepare for that. That's why every year or so I evaluate all my investments and I take the worst one and sell it.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Or get out of it or try to figure out what I'm doing. And then I try to find something better after I've learned something and I move that equity into something else. I don't take that money and buy something fancy or a bigger house. I try to find another place for that money so that, you know, I don't have a ton of cash sitting around either because I have all my money working for me.
Sure.
And I'm living off those dividends. So I don't know.
That works.
Passive income streams are a wonderful thing if you figure out how to make them work. And I've figured out how to make them work for the last 4 years. So.
We talked about this and a few other people chimed in on it as well. We all seem to think this would be an excellent passive income stream for you. Becoming a Peloton instructor. When's that career going to start, Lance?
Oh, yeah. Just sign me up. Just get me on that screen. Let me bark at people and wear dolphin shorts
big
over my
fancy mustache, the headband, the Lance Romance
you
music.
Bet.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
I could be Can't your you guy on Peloton.
Here we go. Come
Lance
on.
Lance Hepler.
Oh, that's awesome.
That'd be funny.
Let's talk about your family real quick. What was the toughest part about being your dad for you?
Okay. Your kids are going to make mistakes, and you have to be okay with that by still loving them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was hard, but that was, I want my kids to be great people, and I want them to make great decisions, and I want to protect them from pain and suffering. And I mean, that's naturally what you want to do as a father. But you have to let your kids make their own mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because, as you just said, you're either winning or you're learning.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
It's got to be one of those two things. And with every disappointment or trouble or mess, there's something to be learned from it. And so I've tried very hard to let my kids make their own mistakes and not bail them out, you know,
yeah,
entirely. So, you know, there's a point to the suffering.
Yeah, you don't want to let them, like...
There's a limit to the suffering.
Exactly. It starts to hurt you too much, yeah.
Right.
So...
But I'm very fortunate that I married the woman that I married.
Amen to that, yep. Well, not just for you, but for myself as well. I'm just going to say the same thing, so...
Brandy is a wonderful human being. She does some things fantastic that I'm terrible at. Believe it or not, she's a much more giving and kind person than I am. And so that can make it a little bit tricky.
Sure.
The biggest thing about Brandy is that we were able to develop our raising kids strategy together, and we see eye to eye on a lot of things.
Sure.
And that can be a big source of conflict between couples. Mm-hmm. And I guess our relationship just worked out that it ended up being a good thing for the both of us.
You managed the businesses. I'm sure she helped out with that a little bit as well.
She did.
And she did a fantastic job of managing the home. And so you guys kind of had a finely tuned machine.
I didn't have to worry about what happened at home because Brandy was there to take care of things. Mm-hmm. And so she's been an artist. We've talked about her a lot, but she's been an artist her whole life.
I'm going to press pause on you right there. And let's just talk about Brandy just for a split second. I mean, aside from the fact that she's just one of the most incredible people, and I'm not saying that just because she's your wife, but if she was all I knew of the Heplers, I mean, I would
she's
have
this. She's a good person.
She's just a fantastic person.
Yep.
Can't say enough nice things about her. And as good of a person as she is, my God, is she stupid talented. I mean, it's just ridiculous how she can go and just bust out these little art drawings and whatnot, and it would take me a month to try and make something look like 10% as good as what she does.
I can't even draw a stick figure to look appropriate.
Yeah.
And her ability to create things is just phenomenal.
And she turns stuff out all the time.
Well, she's gotten into the Procreate app that's on the iPad that you use with the pencil, and she's gotten extremely good at it.
Yeah.
And so while we're driving, I drive.
Yeah.
I'm the driver.
There you go.
And so while we're driving around, she is creating art on her iPad. She's not listening. She's listening to whatever murder podcast I've got, you know, rolling. But she's always creating things, and it's just amazing. She's done set design for stage plays because my kids were all involved in theater. Yep. She's done murals in several different offices, not just mine, but she's been paid professionally to create murals for different places. She's done a lot of fine art work as well. Yep. She's done paintings. I don't know. She's amazing.
She's got all these little characters though that they're just like they come to life. I mean, like they have life and spirit about them. And I'm like, how do you freaking do that? That's just ridiculous. Like, she just captures like feelings and emotions in her paintings.
Yes.
It's cool. And I can't understand for the life of me why she hasn't been scooped up by half a dozen different book artists or book people just to illustrate these different books. I mean, she does such a fantastic
job. She's very good at that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is because I don't want this to sound weird, but she doesn't need to.
Well, yeah, but it's also...
So she does it. She does it purely out of... She draws what she wants to draw,
sure.
Just what she loves.
Yeah.
It's not a job for her. Although she would love to make more money than she's making at it. She does make money at it.
Yeah.
But she would love to make more money. Actually, what she wants me to do is to take over. She wants me to start like a whole art business, you know, behind what she can create and what she can do and syndicate things. And she'd like me to do all that.
Do it.
I know I should, but I'm just playing bikes.
Okay, we're still on the Brandy tangent, but real quick before we press in on that, what if somebody wants to go and see some of her art, they can go to Instagram. That's pretty much the only place that she has stuff posted up for the most part.
She does. She also has a website.
Okay, what are those?
The website is BrandyHeplerArt.com.
Okay.
And her Instagram feed is BrandyHeplerArt.
Okay, well, there you go. Go check that stuff out. Seriously, it's awesome. She's worth a follow. It's good stuff, so.
And she's been really consistent with posting stuff since she figured out the whole digital thing.
Gotcha. So now that you're footloose and fancy free with the kids front, and you're still a dad. I mean, you're still very much active in your kids' lives.
I am so fortunate. I have three fantastic kids.
You did well.
They are good kids. They're good people. I actually like hanging out with them.
Yep.
I actually like being with them. And so, you know, a lot of our trips are kind of around, okay, we always make a swing through wherever the kids are at just because we want to spend time with them, too.
They're all three living in Utah, though, yeah?
No.
Darby's in Washington.
Darby's in Washington.
Western Washington.
She's in Pullman.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you just do that little loop hook and
we
just go see the kids.
Huh? Yep. And oh my, Utah's a great state for van life. It is great state for van life. There's a lot of fantastic things to do. There's great places to camp. There are great places to boondock. There's the riding is world class.
Yep.
So
Thunder Mountain. That's in Utah, right?
That's in Utah.
Oh, take me there, Lance.
Central Utah. It was amazing. That is a great ride.
What's next with the kids? How soon before your grandpa Lance?
Oh.
Is that still a ways off, or?
I think that's still a ways off.
So your oldest is Lake. How old is Lake now?
Lake is 26.
Okay. How old were you when you had Lake?
I was 25 when Lake was born.
All right.
So was he 20? I think I was 25 when I was born.
Gotcha.
Lake is 26. He actually has a great girlfriend. Her name is Abby. She is from Utah as well. I don't want to put any pressure on that relationship, so I'm not going to speculate.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. That is Abby calling me right now.
Let's turn this off. Everybody's trying to call us now.
All of a sudden, people are trying to get you.
Yep.
I don't know. He definitely wants to get married and have kids.
At some point in time.
So that'll happen. Kelty is my next one. She is 24. She is my film student. She's the one that's in the film industry.
All in on that, right?
She is all in on that.
And how far off from being done with school is she?
She graduates in the spring. She has one semester to go.
Gotcha. So, and she's already actively working.
She's working. She's turning down more jobs than she can do.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's an assistant director, and she's been known as an assistant director in the Utah film industry. So she not only – she doesn't get jobs just to be like a PA on film – an assistant on film. She actually gets jobs all over Utah. She just filmed like a Merrill commercial and a commercial for Twitter, I believe, and another one for – yeah, I mean, she's
wow.
Yeah, she gets more jobs than she can, and she hasn't even finished her degree yet, which you don't really need, but she's so close, she wants to finish.
Yeah, why not?
So, Kelty will get married at some point, but she—that is not a priority.
That'll happen for her down the road. It'll happen when it happens. Right?
It'll happen when it happens, yeah. And she's kind of planning on heading to Southern California once she's done with school.
Ugh.
I know.
L.A.?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I told her, I'm like, you have so many connections in Utah. And the film industry, she's like, Dad, the whole film industry is in L.A. and I'm going to L.A. So that's what her plan is.
Yeah,
so,
she'll go down there and she'll crush it and she'll have some giant mansion on the beach because she can't afford it because she already retired and she's got more money than everybody combined, right?
That's right. That will happen with her.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, and then Darby, she's your little spark plug.
Darby is my spark plug. She graduates very soon as well in psychology.
Nice.
And I believe women's studies as well.
What does she want to do with psychology?
She is going to be a counselor.
Oh, really?
Yes. So she's planning on going to a master's degree. She okay. doesn't think she'll do a PhD, but she is planning on doing a master's degree. But looking for someone to intern with this summer when oh, she comes back.
Okay.
That's a practicing psychologist or counselor.
Sure.
So that's kind of
she
what she's thinking.
About getting into the world of education?
I don't know yeah. if she's thought about that or not.
Yeah,
so
after set up with my wife.
Yes.
And go talk shop.
That's so. A possibility. Darby is wonderful. She is engaged to be married to Julie.
Woo. Woo.
Yep.
Yep. Julie's a sweetheart.
Julie is fantastic. I love her as much as I love Darby.
Yeah.
She is a wonderful gal. I'm so happy that she's joining our family. I really am. She's just a good person.
Rabbit's foot.
Yes. I know. So I'm thinking the chance to have grandkids actually there's more of a chance with Darby and Julie having grandkids before anybody else potentially, but you know that's complicated. Whether it's surrogate or adopting or
you can tell me this right now. I promise I won't tell anybody. Nobody's listening. Shh.
Nobody's listening.
How badly do you and Brandy want grandkids?
Oh, we want grandkids pretty bad.
No pressure, kids. No pressure.
It would give us a whole nother purpose yeah. in our life. You know, right now, Brandy and I are being very selfish with our time, and we would love to have some grandkids yeah. to spoil.
Gotcha.
So, you know, Brandy and I both neither have had real good, strong relationships with our own grandparents, and so to be able to make that different with our own grandkids,
yeah.
we would really like that. So, yeah, we want grandkids.
Cool. Okay, here's another question for you.
Bring it.
What's still on Lance Hepler's personal bucket list? You've done a lot of stuff, my friend, and you've still got a lot of years ahead of you because you're still young at heart and on the bike and in general. What else is on your bucket list? What do you want to accomplish?
Wow. I want grandkids.
You don't say.
There's still some places in the world I'd like to visit.
Like where?
New Zealand, Australia.
There you go.
I would like to ride my bike through the French Alps and the Pyrenees.
Oof, that would be fantastic.
I would like to ride my bike more through Italy and Europe. I'd like to spend more time cycling in Europe. That is complicated to do and expensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm not super rich. I'm just comfortable. So those are a couple things that I really like to do.
Real quick, what do you define as super rich? What's that threshold? How much money do you have to be to consider super rich?
Well,
I'm scratching my head over here, Lance.
I don't know, a net worth of like $50 million?
Okay, that's pretty stinking rich.
Yeah,
so.
That's pretty stinking rich.
That's where like that's like FU money.
Yeah.
So
and
I
don't
just do what you want.
I have a frick you money, which
yeah. Dang you.
I have dang you money, which means I don't really have to work, but I can't do whatever I want.
Correct.
So you know.
Go buy some more cryptocurrency.
I do have some money in crypto, which is done well, but, you know, that's just gambling.
Yeah, it is.
It's really about experiences. I want to experience different things. I've done a lot of different experiences as far as bucket list things. But it's really visiting different places in the world that I haven't seen. There's a lot of corners just in the United States I haven't seen.
True.
I've seen a lot of the U.S., and there's a lot more I could see. And it is so much easier to travel in the U.S. than it is to go to other countries.
Especially in this day and age, yep.
Especially if you want all your bikes with you.
Yeah.
So, boy, I hate to say this. I don't have, like, big bucket list things because
well, I think the couple places that you rattled off, I mean, aside from having grandkids, the couple places, that's huge bucket list stuff for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
That's like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing. You could probably go do that next month if you wanted to, but you're still playing the game. You're still, like, being you know, frugal to a certain degree, and that's good.
Correct.
But those are some good things. What about, like, racing, though? Are there some big races out there that you really would like to train up for, go out there, represent, and do really well at?
Man, I'd like to do Leadville someday.
That'd be cool.
It's a 100-mile. It's a 9-hour race. It might be an 8 or a 9-hour race for me, and I don't do well after 4 or 5 hours. We've talked about that.
Start training with Evan. He's doing it this coming year for right. 22.
That's right. He's going to go boat do it. Lead yeah. boat. Boy, I didn't think about races I want to do because I've done a lot of ones I want to do. I don't know. What do you think I should do, Jake?
I think the Leadville one's probably a pretty good call for you. All of the big gravel races, I think that you could travel around and do really well there. I know that you don't do well at the 100-plus mile
I want to do the shorter version
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, and almost all of them have that as an option.
They do.
So
yeah,
I think that you could have a lot of fun there.
Big Sugar, Unbound, those are big races I'd like to do. There's a whole Grasshopper series, which would be fun to do. Rebecca's Private Idaho, which I've done several times. Oh, man, there's some great gravel races. I'm going to lean more towards off-road racing, mountain bike racing, or gravel racing than road racing just because the vibe is so much funner.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much funner in the off-road community. And don't get me wrong, I'm going to do road races too, but man, the gravel stuff is funner. So.
Gotcha. All right, a couple more questions, then we'll wrap this thing up. You got any tips for younger or new cyclists?
Oh, don't get frustrated early.
Yeah.
Don't get frustrated too easily. It's extremely intimidating as a brand new cyclist to ride with other people, to ride in a group, to possibly line up at a race, to all that stuff can be really intimidating. Or am I wearing the right stuff or do I have the right gear? You know what? Everybody started there.
Yep.
Everybody started somewhere.
Yep. And Matt said this before on the podcast way back in the day. We're not born with this knowledge. I use that little term all the time. Thanks, Matt.
Yes.
I'll pay you for it someday. But we're not born with this knowledge, and we're not born coming out of the womb being fantastic cyclists who can go out there and crush. I mean, it takes a little bit of time. And if you connect with the right people that aren't a bunch of elitists, they'll teach you these little things.
Correct.
And you'll slowly pick it up and you'll enjoy it much, much more.
Yes.
So how about just the young ones in general? Where do you see like pitfalls with them? I mean, we're going to be doing so much stuff with our juniors, and I know that we have juniors that listen to the podcast as well. What are some like tips for them in cycling that you could like impart?
Don't specialize too early.
I would 100% agree with that.
Like people that decide they're baseball players when they're 7 years old. And all I'm going to do is play baseball. I mean, I'm going to focus on that. My whole offseason is going to be focused around that. And you don't quite know that you might be better at something else or that you might really enjoy something else more. And you run the risk of burnout if Yep. you do too much too early. So when you're a kid, when you're a teenager or somebody young, be a kid. Mm-hmm. Be a teenager. Hang out with your friends.
Amen.
Do some fun things other than just focus on your sport or just focus on your schooling or, I like the more well-rounded individual that they tend to be the ones that tend to be more successful if you are more well-rounded in certain things. So,
yeah, I think one other thing that I can add to that too is a lot of new people as well as younger cyclists. Don't let one race, one season, or one accident, or one thing define you.
Correct.
You know, you will bounce back.
Yes.
And I'm still constantly reminding myself of that of this day, and I'm trying my best to not let things define me. And damn it, I'm gonna keep pushing forward. So, but just don't let that one thing define you. You're gonna have bad races. You're gonna have a bad season. You might have a bad year.
Yeah.
You know, don't let that define you. Just keep enjoying it and understand that this is something fun. It's supposed to be fun.
It's supposed to be fun.
Have fun with it.
Right.
So
exactly.
Very cool. All right. Last time. Last question.
Okay.
Do you remember the first time we met?
I do remember the first time we met.
How did you know who I was, Lance?
Because I stalked you on Strava. I stalked. Okay. I'm on Strava, and I I started losing KOMs to some jackhole named Jake Von Deering. And I realized I was losing a lot of KOMs to this guy. And so I stalked you. Where are you? Where did you come from? And I realized you came from Southern California because yeah. I like seriously stalked you, looked at your old rides, looked at the KOMs. I mean, I just like dug through your Strava history, whatever was public back then. And yeah, so when I ended up at a certain race, I had seen enough pictures of you that you looked familiar.
Sure.
And so that's why
the reason why I asked is because that story just came up yesterday.
Oh, really?
It did. And like, yeah, I was telling them that, yeah, we were doing the Jack Frost time trial, and I was lined up in the queue, and I didn't know anybody, and all of a sudden somebody's calling my name. I'm like, who knows my name? I'm a nobody here. And you came
It was
up
the first year you were here. Yeah.
And we started riding together shortly after that. Yeah. So I have to say that you're probably one of my favorite people to ride with ever of all time. So thank you for stalking me. Thank you for coming up and saying hi. And man, this has been a fun ride.
It's been a mutually beneficial relationship for sure. Because you've done a lot of good for me too, Jake. Absolutely.
Good times. Lance, that's it, dude.
That's it.
That's the Lance interview. Mr. Lance Hepler, thank you so much for your time.
I have so many more stories to tell.
Then tell them.
We'll save them for another week.
All right, let's do one last thing. I don't even know what my one. Oh, I do know what my one last thing is. Sorry. Go ahead, Lance. What's your one last thing?
My one last thing. I saw the doctor this morning, Jake.
Okay, and
I am gonna have to get injections again. I don't know how to say this. I might have to be very selective about the cyclocross races I do.
How much does that hurt you?
It is extremely frustrating because it is the racing that I love and I tend to do the best at. But the off-the-bike running is no good for me. So
if the injections don't cause things to settle down, cause you to have some, you know, relief from all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to have surgery.
I'm going to have surgery again, probably.
Okay. What does that look like?
I'd be off the bike for 3 to 6 weeks, depending on how difficult the surgery is.
I was so hoping you weren't going to say months. That's actually not too bad.
Traditionally, I've been able to get back on the trainer within days.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, there's no danger.
What would the surgery be, though?
Probably a laminectomy, a microdiscectomy. So just removing more of a herniated disc that is putting pressure on spinal root ganglia that is causing sciatic symptoms.
Would it make any sense just to do that? Or is there a risk there that you just don't want to have to run, or you just don't want to have to go under the knife? Or
I just don't want to have to go under the knife. Yeah, I'd rather not do that. You know what he told me to do?
Huh.
Yoga.
Freaking A. Well, we started doing Pilates, and you had a little bit of a bad experience with that, and it might have been just one of those things that did set it off, but I still think there might be something there for you to work on some of those smaller supportive muscles and work on those little ranges of motion and work with a therapist who is a Pilates instructor that can kind of work around that, do the therapeutic approach to developing your core.
Yeah.
And not for nothing, but that's going to benefit you on the bike.
Yeah, it would benefit me.
You're going to not have pain, and you're going to be more stable, and you're going to be faster. Yeah. So. Did you watch Dylan Johnson's video he just put out this morning?
I did not.
Strength training for cycling. It's a good little video.
I can't
wholeheartedly agree with it. So
I can't do deadlifts or squats.
Well, in he did talk about that. Those are big movements for cyclists, and he's talked about the performance gains that come from those particular exercises in terms of like increased endurance, increased power output. It's just it positively affects you across the board. Yeah. And he went on, I'm like thinking about this, like, oh, this would be, you know, great for Lance, but he can't do that stuff. And then he's like, well, you know, and if you can't do any of these because of a back injury, I'm like, ding, use a leg press. So, I mean, there's other ways to skin that cat that you can develop that, but you still need to do the strength training to support your core and to get you in a position to where you're not going to get beat up. But man, to think about you having to be selective with cross races, that's got to break your heart just a little bit, right?
It does. It does. It just means I can do the dry races, the races without big run ups. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that's gonna look like. I can see that if my back's not hurting, I'm just gonna go full bore, and that's why I'm in this position at the moment.
Gotcha. Well, I wish you the best. You're gonna go get your injections. Hopefully that makes you feel better, and We'll have to go for a bike ride.
I can do that.
How soon are you getting those injections, and how soon is it going to make you feel good?
I'll probably do the injections next week or the week after. Yep. I'm assuming it will be pretty quick.
Yeah.
So.
Right on.
It was fun. My surgeon, or not this, the guy I talk with, he's a mountain biker, so we can't get in there with him, and all he wants to do is talk about mountain biking, and where are the good trails in Utah, and where should I not miss, and where, it was just funny. We spent more
That's
time
funny.
Talking mountain biking than anything else.
All right, my one last thing real quick is this coming Saturday, we're doing the Ugly Christmas Sweater
Ride. Yes!
That's going to be fantastic. It's always a good time. And the weather looks good.
Oh, that would be nice.
So we're going to be doing a little 22-mile loopish kind of thing. And we're actually going to do the Camas route like we did last year, similar to that last year. And we're going to stop at a coffee shop down there for a regroup and
oh, cool.
warm cup of coffee, and then we'll make our way back. But more importantly, that's fun and all, but more importantly, this kicks off our Bikes for Kids campaign.
Yes.
And we've got the GoFundMe up there. It's set up. It's tied to the Dialed Cycling Team, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, and it's set up on the GoFundMe that if you do make a donation, you will get a receipt that you can use for tax write-off purposes. I barely even announced this, and it's already raised over $1,000.
Nice.
That's so awesome. And so we're already 10% the way to our goal, and we're going to be doing these fundraising stuff like well into the new year. So
Excellent.
Hopefully we'll be able to hit that number. And if anybody out there wants to support that, that'd be fantastic. It's already posted up on the Facebook page for the Dialed podcast, or if you follow any of the other Dialed Cycling Media, it's posted up everywhere. We'll continue to post it up just to remind people. And even if it's just $5, I mean, if you want to chip $5 in to help a kid, 100% of all proceeds, there's no overhead, no nothing. Like every single dime that we raise for this is going to go towards buying bikes, helmets, and locks for
Excellent.
Kids that are less fortunate. So do consider making a little donation there if you could, and we would greatly appreciate that. And we'll keep you posted on all of the progress that we make in the whole bike building process. We'll be giving you guys updates so you can know how that money's being spent. So pretty
Love
stoked
it.
About that.
Yeah, that's a great charity and a great event when we're able to do it. So I'm stoked.
Gotcha. Hey, Lance, thank you for your interview today. We already did Matt's, and that was fun too. Evan is up next. Any questions that you have for Evan?
I'm going to have to pin him down.
he and I already talked, and I think we'll be able to get this done before episode 200. We'll let that be the show's last thing. We've got, this is 197.
Yeah.
So we got 198, 199. So one of those two episodes will be the Evan interview. And then we're going to do 200. We still haven't nailed down a place because I've been so stinking busy, but we'll get something done.
But we're doing a live show.
And we'll get Evan's thing done. So all three of you guys will be done, which will be fantastic. And then, but do you have any questions for Evan?
Why are you so knock-kneed, and how do you fix that? I'm sorry. Evan will never listen to this. He won't get this far. Will he get this far?
I don't know. He is he's got a big race this week, and he's doing half Ironman down in Palm Springs.
Palm Springs, half Ironman. Yeah.
Last race of the season. He's pretty fit right
he's
now.
He's really fit.
Yeah.
He smoked me last night in the hot lap.
Both the damn triathletes did last night. They were with us last night. It's terrible. And they're even calling us out on Discord.
They were.
Hey, the triathletes just smoked all the cyclists. They can't shut up. Maybe you need to give up triathlon and take up bike racing because you're pretty stinking fast there.
That's right.
All right, that's it.
Cool.
That's a wrap. Thank you for your time, Mr. Hepler.
And
thank you, everybody, for listening. We will catch you next week. Until then, bye for now.